On this show, we are going to talk about getting an apartment in Tokyo. Everything you need to know to find your new home away from home. All the fees that you're going to have to pay. All the weird acronyms you're going to have to learn. And what's the best website to find an apartment in Tokyo. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Tokyo Podcast. I'm your host, Anthony Joe, and this is episode 2 of season 2. Hope many of you liked the very first episode of season 2, which I released last week, where I talked about the 5 things I love and 5 things I hate about living in Japan. And I'd be curious as to what you thought of the show and what your own particular list is. If you want to reach out to me, you can do so on Twitter at Tokyo Podcast. And especially if you're kind of new to Japan, I'd be kind of curious to compare like how long you've lived in Japan and what your list is like. I actually find that typically around the 4 or 5 year mark, which is where I'm at, this is where we're the most bitter. When you first get here, everything's all new and kawaii, and you're like, oh, sugoi, everything's so Japanese. And then after about the 4 or 5 year mark, you're like, oh, God, everything's so Japanese. And then at the 10-year mark, you're like, shogunai. That's when you've given up and you've just become full-on Japanese. But if you've got any feedback on that show, send it to me. I'd love to hear it. Anyways, on this particular show, I'm going to talk about getting an apartment in Tokyo. Because that show, if I look at the stats I did on the original show, they're still quite popular. And I feel like, I listened to that show again, and I feel like the information in that show is still really relevant. I mean, there wasn't a whole lot I could add to it. Because, let's face it, this is Japan, not a whole lot changes. So if you're looking for an apartment in Japan, start with that show. I'll post a link to that show in the show notes of this episode. But that's a good place to start. So I thought I would just kind of offer a little bit of my experience in getting an apartment in Japan. And, you know, combine it with the information in that show, this should help you get all set up. So let me start with the first thing is, what I recommend you start with is location. And when I first got here, I remember looking at various websites trying to find apartments and being confused because I didn't like know where anything is. And Tokyo is so spread out, it's hard to kind of get a grasp on what's a good area, what's a bad area. Because it's so big that each, like if you kind of take a look at it like and divide like in a pie chart, like each area will have a good and bad area, you know. So what I recommend you do is figure out where you're going to be working or where you're going to be going to school and find the nearest stations to that. So typically if you're working or you're going to school, you're going to come to one particular station. So start there. That's a good starting point. And then find the train lines that go through that station. Typically, I mean, they may have one or two, they may have just one and 4 or 5, whatever. If you're working near Shinjuku, you got like, I don't know, 20 lines coming in there. But find some train lines that are running through there and then work your way backwards along the train line until you find an area that you want to live in. And this will kind of help you, especially if you're meeting real estate agents, to kind of break down a little bit where you want to live. Because what might happen is if you come here and you say like I want to, you're talking to an agent and they ask you what would you like and you say, oh, I want a an apartment at this size close to a park that has a grocery store nearby. I mean, there's hundreds and thousands of those everywhere, right? So it's hard for them to break it down. But if you say like, okay, I am my husband or my wife is going to be we're going to be working at this particular station. And then we have 2 kids and we want this kind of thing, then they can start to look at the train lines that run through there and it'd be easier for them to find an area of housing that will fit you and your lifestyle. So start with where you'll be working, where you'll be spending most of your time, and then find the train lines, go through there, and then work your way back from there. And then one thing to think about is when you get to, say you find an area that you like and you're looking at the actual listings, keep in mind how far or close it is to the actual station. Obviously, the apartments and houses that are closer to the station are more expensive. And it's funny. I remember when I first moved here, I was looking at different websites. And they had this like drop down list of distances, time distances from the station. And one was like 3 minutes, 5 minutes, 7 minutes, 9 minutes. I remember thinking like, really, is that such a big deal between 3 and 7 minutes? It's only like 4 minutes, like big deal, right? But, you know, live here a while, you're like, damn, that's 4 minutes. That's too far. Because think about it. Everything in Tokyo is done through the train. You don't really need a car here. Most people don't have a car. So you move about the city on the train. So if you have to, say, carry something heavy home one day, well, you're doing it on the train, unless, of course, you want to take a taxi, but taxis are expensive. So you're doing it on the train. So you got to walk from the station to your house. Or worse is if you listen to the first episode of Tokyo Podcast last week, you know that one of my pet peeves is the summer in Japan. And honestly, that difference between a 3 minute walk and a 7 minute walk to the station can make a huge difference in how comfortable you are for the rest of the day while you're working away, because the summer here is so damn hot that literally like I wouldn't even walk 7 minutes honestly in the summer. It's crazy. You're gonna be sweating like crazy. You're gonna get to the office and you're gonna stink and you're gonna feel uncomfortable and you're gonna think, damn, I just wish I listened to Anthony on Tokyo Podcast and got an apartment that was only 3 minutes away. It really makes a big difference. So keep in mind these like small little things that can make a big impact on how enjoyable your life is here in Japan. Okay, so the second thing that you're going to do is obviously you're going to have to start dealing with agents, real estate agents. And even if you're renting, here in Japan, you don't really talk to the landlords very much. Very rarely do you actually deal directly with landlords. Most of the time, you're dealing with an agent. And actually, this is something that you'll find very common in Japan. Japan is the land of middlemen. There's always people in the middle who don't really seem to do a lot, but you got to pay them a lot, and they're always just stuck in the middle. It's really annoying, but that's just how the system works here. So yeah, you will have to deal with real estate agents, and you don't really deal with the landlords too much. And so what you're going to try to do is start to search for different real estate. You'll actually see these their offices around Tokyo all over the place. Any neighborhood that you go to, you'll see this real estate office, and they usually have all their apartment listings outside their office, like on a sandwich board or taped to their window or whatnot. But those people, you can deal with them, but if you don't speak any English, or sorry, if you don't speak any Japanese, chances are it'll be difficult to deal with those agents, because most likely they don't speak any English. So if you walk into there and say, hey, I've been walking around the neighborhood, I'd like to find a place around here, they're just going to look at you with a blank stare and they'll usher you out the door and you won't be able to deal with them. So if you don't speak Japanese, the website that I recommend that you start your search on is called realestate.co.jp. Now, this website is owned by the company called GPlus Media, which also owns Gaijinpot. Now, of course, if you've been listening to the show for a while, you know that I have an association with Gaijinpot. But I do honestly feel that Real Estate Japan is the best place to start your search for apartments here, because they have one of the largest databases of foreigner-friendly real estate agents in Japan. So if you got some super weirdo niche place that you're trying to find, you might not find it on Real Estate Japan. You might find it like some local agency might have it. But then again, you run into the language barrier. And I remember the first time I came here looking, trying to find an apartment, like some of these agents are just weird. I remember this one, I won't mention her company, but you know, they were in Ueno area, and they have properties listed all over the place. I've seen them on Real Estate Japan. I've seen them on Craigslist. So we contacted them and said, hey, you know, we like to look at a couple of properties. So they asked us to come out to their office. And we went out there and filled out all this paperwork. And, you know, she looked through all these properties. We looked through all these different properties that they had on our computer. And she said she was going to contact them. And then next week, we'd be able to go see these places. And I was like, okay, great. And then the next week, we arranged a time to meet at her office. She did the exact same thing again. Like, she's just like, hello, and then let's take a look at some properties. And we didn't actually go see any properties whatsoever. And I didn't really understand what was going on, so I didn't really say anything. I thought maybe this is just Japanese procedure or some weird old thing like that. And so we just looked at a bunch more, and then, you know, we said, okay, we'd like to take a look at these. And then, like, it was almost like deja vu. Like, the same thing happened again. She's just like, okay, I'll contact them, and we can meet, and then that was it. So we left. And then like a couple of days later, she sent me this weird email saying like, if you're not serious about going to look at these properties, why are you wasting my time? And I was like, what? What the hell is this chick talking about? It was so strange. So I just ignored it because obviously there's some kind of either miscommunication or we didn't understand what the procedure was or something like that. But, you know, I found her email highly unprofessional for one, and I didn't want to deal with that. So I just ignored it. And then a couple of days later, she sent me like another email saying like, so did you want to go look at these properties or what's going on? I was like, what the heck is going on with this lady? So dealing with the agents is probably going to be the most challenging part for a couple of reasons. One is language and culture. I mean, let's face it, Japan is not exactly known as a very open country, right? Even the Japanese themselves admit that, and they're super happy about it. But, you know, it's not, I don't think it's illegal here, or even if it is, it's not enforced in that landlords can refuse to rent to you if you're a foreigner. And they'll flat out tell you that. They'll say, nope, don't rent to you foreigners. And there's a number of reasons for that, one of which is could be that they just don't like foreigners. That could be. Another reason could be that they just don't speak any other language but Japanese, and so they're worried about whether they can communicate with you or not, and it's just easier for them just to say no foreigners instead of trying to admit that they don't speak another language and being embarrassed and all that. So it's just a face-saving measure for them. But regardless, and some of them may just don't like foreigners at all. So you will encounter situations where landlords don't want to rent to you because you're a foreigner or for whatever reason. And so that's why dealing with the real estate agents that are on Real Estate Japan helps solve this, because they are obviously on that website to deal with foreigners. And I'm starting to see more and more real estate websites now that are kind of claiming to be catering to foreigners. But what I'm seeing, though, is a lot of Japanese companies now are starting to understand the money that foreigners have. And so they're starting to see it as a potential lucrative market, and they want to try to get into it. But the problem is, like I've seen like countless times, whenever a Japanese company tries to deal with foreigners, what they do is they try to deal with it in a massively Japanese way. They don't ever think about saying, wait a minute, our entire client base are foreigners. Maybe we should operate in a foreign way to make it easier for them. No, they don't think that. What they think is, let's market ourselves to these foreigners and try to get the foreigners to do things in the Japanese way. So I'm starting to see this with a lot of the real estate properties that are starting to pop up now. The difference with Real Estate Japan is Real Estate Japan is obviously run by the same company that runs Gaijinpot. It started off as a foreign-run agency. They're run by foreigners, run by Westerners. So that's where the mindset shift is different. And they have all sorts of services like translation and all these kinds of things. So if you're having issue with the landlord, you can call them up and they'll call the landlord directly and all this kind of stuff. So anyways, I really recommend that you start on realestate.co.jp, and you can do a search by area, you can do a search by train line and all that, and then start to contact those agents off there. If you have problems with the agents, if they refuse you because you're a foreigner, just contact the admin staff at Real Estate Japan and they'll boot that agent off the listing. So you don't have to worry about that. One other property that I wanted to mention that's kind of unique, but I think you need to speak quite a good level of Japanese to get into it, is this thing called UR properties. And UR properties are this some kind of deal with the government, and where you I think you can say they're only a maximum of 2 years or something like that. But the fees that you typically have to pay to move into a regular apartment are reduced or almost non-existent when you go to a UR property. So you don't have to pay key money, you don't have to pay guarantor fee, you don't have to pay all this other crap that you will have to pay when you go to a regular Japanese real estate agency. So, but I think that the UR properties, I've seen some of their English websites, but I think typically they want you to have been in Japan for a while or speak a pretty good level of Japanese. I don't think they're quite popular with foreigners yet. But if language is not an issue for you, just do a search online, UR Properties Tokyo, and you'll find different agencies that list them. And I'll post some links, obviously, in the show notes as well. But I have a friend of mine who lives in a UR property. And I mean, I remember he told me he even had a storage locker. And I was like shocked. I'm like, what, a storage locker? So definitely check them out. Next one I want to talk about is the cost of housing. And this is something that people ask me a lot about, is how much does it cost to live in Tokyo? And like I mentioned in my first show, it really depends on your budget and what kind of lifestyle you want to have, because there are all sorts of housing options available here. This is something I really like about Japan. I am not looking forward to trying to rent a place when I move back to Canada, because the housing market in Canada has absolutely gone bonkers. And I don't know who's all moving to Canada suddenly, but renting an apartment in Toronto, Vancouver, Victoria is just really, really difficult because the supply is so limited. Whereas here in Tokyo, I mean, you got a huge chunk of supply here. You don't have to worry about it. There's always apartments available. The challenge is just, like I said, dealing with the language barrier with the landlords or the cultural issues or whatever. But you can always find a place within your budget. However, when you're trying to budget for your apartment, you're going to have to factor in a few of the quintessential Japanese things that you're going to have to pay for. So let me break it down for you, and I'll kind of explain what these things are. Say you find a place that you want to rent for $80,000 a month. And this is about the average for like a one-room apartment in Tokyo, roughly 25 to 30 square meters-ish, you know. I don't know what that is in feet anymore. I can't remember. But, you know, it's basically a studio room, right? $80,000, roughly about $800 a month is what you're going to have to pay for that. And you can live fairly close to a major train station for that price. Okay, so you're paying $80,000 a month. First month that you move in, obviously you're going to have to pay a deposit. That's quite common. You may or may not get that back. Most likely you won't, because landlords here are super, super picky. They'll go over the apartment with like a fine-tooth comb. And if you've put like one pinprick hole in the wall, I mean, there goes your deposit. It's just a way for them to keep more money from you. So don't really expect to get that back. But typically deposit, you have to pay about 1 or 2 months. Third thing you have to pay is what's called key money. And I'm sure you've probably read online what this is. Essentially, key money is a bribe. You're bribing the old geezer to let you rent this place. And this comes from a time, long time ago, when there was a housing shortage in Tokyo. And when there was a housing shortage, obviously landlords who own the property can charge whatever they want. So it became quite common to give the guy key money, basically a gift, a bribe to let him to ask him to rent the property to you. Now, of course, this being Japan and traditions never change, and all these old guys that own these properties, of course, why would they ever want to change it? Because they make money from it. Things have stayed the same. So many properties now, you'll have to pay 1 or 2 months key money. Now, one thing about key money is, see, the Japanese landlords are kind of clever in that they know that people don't want to pay this, but they also know that the Japanese consumer will never say anything. It's mostly the foreigners who bitch and complain about it. So either they'll A, refuse to work with a foreigner, or B, they'll say, fine, we'll take off the key money, but then they jack your rent up anyways. So either way, you're going to be paying it. Whether you pay it directly or indirectly, you're going to be paying that. So key money is about 1 or 2 months rent. And there's also an agency fee. So here in Japan, like I said, there's always middlemen in the way, and it's always the consumer that has to pay for it. It's never the company that ever pays for this. So you, as a consumer, have to pay this agency to bring you to the landlord, and if you guys do a deal, you have to pay for that. It's completely ass backwards, but, you know, that's Japan. The agency fee is typically 1 to 1.5 months rent. So if it's 1 month's rent, you're paying the agency 80,000 yen. And there's also a guarantor fee. Now, in Japan, like I mentioned on the previous show, the individual is not as important here as the group. The bigger the group, the more important it is. Think of Japanese culture like an upside down pyramid. So the widest part, the most important part, the biggest part is at the top, and which is usually a company or the government or some kind of organization. And then the weakest part is the individual at the bottom. So you, as an individual renting this apartment, you are untrustworthy because they don't know what group you're associated with. And so that's why they'll ask you for a guarantor. And typically, for Japanese people, the guarantor is usually their parents. Sometimes, I guess, it's the company, but typically their parents. If you're a foreigner and you don't have anybody here or don't know anybody who can act as a guarantor, there are companies that will offer to be your guarantor. Basically, what that means is if you skip out on the rent, the landlord can get the rent from the guarantor company. So you have to pay the guarantor company 1 month's rent as well. And you usually sign a 2-year contract with them. So if you stay in the same apartment every 2 years, you have to pay them another 1 month's rent. Typically, when you move into an apartment, it's usually completely unfurnished and you have to pay a cleaning fee. And what it is, the landlord basically cleans the apartment after you leave. Even though they expect you to clean it, and if you don't, you'll lose your deposit, they still technically collect a cleaning fee to clean it after you've cleaned it. Whether they actually clean it or not is debatable, but there's obviously a fee there. And there's I've seen another one, which is a lock changing fee. 15,000 yen was what I've seen for a lock changing fee. So think about this. The guy goes to Home Depot, buys a lock for $5, and charges you $150 to change that lock. Another thing that you have to buy is insurance, fire and earthquake insurance. And this is something you renew every 2 years as well. And for an 80,000 yen a month apartment, roughly it's about 20,000 yen, so about $200. And some properties have what's called a maintenance fee, usually 5,000 to 10,000 yen. And that's just like a maintenance for the whole building. Some have it, some don't. So I've kind of left it out for now. So if you add all of that up, you are at a total of $465,000, roughly $4,500 to move in to your $800 a month apartment. And that most of that, you're not getting that back. That's all the move in on the first day. So if you find a place for $800, you need to bring almost $5,000 with you to move in on the first day. And like I said, most of that you're not getting back. So you're thinking, well, screw this. I'm not going to pay all that. That's a total ripoff. Well, yes, it is. But think about this. In Japan, apparently, it's really difficult to kick people out of their apartment or raise the rent. Apparently, the laws work in favor quite a bit of the tenants. So I remember Adam mentioned it on the first show we did about housing. If you decide to suddenly stop paying your rent and your landlord wants to kick you out, the whole legal process can take like 6 to 9 months. And during that whole time, you can just not be paying rent. So you could almost live in your apartment for a whole year without paying rent if you really wanted to. And also too is inflation in Japan is not very high, so typically rent prices don't increase very much. And if for those of you living in, say, Vancouver, Toronto, New York, San Francisco, this is probably a big shock to you, but my rent in my apartment, I lived in the same apartment for 5 years, my rent hasn't moved one iota in 5 years. I'm paying the exact same amount now as I was paying 5 years ago. Whereas I know some of you in Vancouver, you're looking at your rent going up almost $100 a month every single year. So how they landlords kind of make their money back from this is they charge you all these fees instead of raising your rent every month. It's just kind of the Japanese way of, you know, basically being a pain in the ass without without directly being a pain in the ass. Because to raise your rent, obviously a pain in the ass. So they try to hide all that by calling it all these extra fees and all this stuff. So I don't know which system is better. The good thing is, though, is you can find properties that don't charge all these fees. Like I mentioned previously, the UR properties don't charge most of these fees. And some landlords now are starting to recognize that foreigners don't like paying key money. And so they'll remove it. But like I said, just ask them what's the rent with or without key money, because you might see a difference and then you realize, well, you're actually just paying that, you know, indirectly anyways. So keep in mind, when you move into your property here in Japan, you need a lot of money. I'd say anywhere from like $5,000 to $10,000 initial move-in cost, depending on the initial cost of rent. Next thing I talk about quickly is about the paperwork. Make sure, obviously, you have all your paperwork prepared. You need to have, you know, your residence card, your passport, visa. If you don't have a long-term visa, probably most places won't rent to you. You need to have at least a one-year-long visa before they'll even consider renting to you. Depending on the type of visa, they might not. I mean, the landlords, like I said, like it's hard for landlords to kick foreigners out. So they're super paranoid about letting anybody in. So they want to make sure that you cross all the T's and dot all the I's. You make sure you got everything ready before they'll rent to you. So you need to have all your documents as well. Proof of income, employee letter, certificate of eligibility if you're a student. Ideally, you have a Japanese bank account, Japanese phone number, all this kind of stuff. And what's challenging is if you move here kind of on your own, like I did, without setting all this stuff in advance, I mean, it's really hard to get a property because in Japan, everything runs on a system. There's a procedure for everything. I remember when I first moved here, I was phoning around and talking to landlords. And I remember they were so surprised that I didn't have a job. Like, they're just shocked. And they asked me, like, what are you going to do? So, well, I've been here for like 3 days. Obviously, I'm going to get an apartment first and then start looking for a job. But in Japan, like, they don't do that. They would never take that kind of risk. That's too scary for them. Like, everything is arranged in advance. So they were shocked that I didn't have a job. So if you kind of come here out of the blue like I did, it makes it a little bit challenging because you can't just kind of make things happen as you go, so to speak. It's not really how the country works too well. However, there are companies that will help you and get you set up in situations like that. So for what I did is I ended up renting from this company called Tokyo Rent. And they were great. They didn't charge me all the ridiculous fees. They actually owned the buildings that they were managing, so they could do whatever they wanted. They didn't have to deal with like a third party. And all I paid to them was 2 months deposit. They said, okay, well, you don't have a job. Why don't you give us 2 months deposit instead of 1 month deposit? And I said, no problem. Yeah, sure. Here you go. And then a week later, I was in my apartment. So Tokyo Rent is great if you're kind of new to Japan. You didn't come here with a job. The only downside to them is the properties are quite old and they don't have that many. So they're kind of scattered about the city. So if they match up with the location you want to live in, then they're really great. So definitely check them out to see if they fit your requirements or not. But make sure that you have all the paperwork available for that, because actually the whole process to fill all that paperwork and complete all that can take up to a week. And this is something I didn't realize either, because I was staying in a hotel when I first moved here. I booked a hotel for 9 days. And I remember my ex-girlfriend and I, at the time, we were like, the first 3 or 4 days, we were like sightseeing and like, wow, this is so great. And then there was a holiday in the middle of that, like a national holiday. And so I think we had like about 4 days left before we had to get kicked out of our hotel. And when we started to look for apartments, and that's when I was told, like, yeah, I can take up to a week just to process the paperwork. So keep that in mind if you're staying in an apartment, that you might need to stay there longer than what you originally thought. So just make sure you have all your paperwork ready. That's the thing in Japan. If you don't have paperwork ready, if you don't have all that ready, they kind of freak out a little bit. But one thing I also want to talk about is the terminology. I got confused at the terminology when I first moved here. And the first two words that kind of confused me was apato and mansion. I remember when I was talking to some of his agents, they're like, hey, so do you want to stay in a mansion? And, you know, I'm like, great, fantastic. I'd love to stay in a mansion for $700 a month. Does it have a swimming pool and a 10-car garage as well? But a mansion here is not what we consider a mansion back home. A mansion here is like a condominium complex. That's why they call it mansion. And apato is basically the Japanese word for apartment, is kind of like, what would you call it? Like a two-story apartment complex. And usually apato are a bit older and they don't have a lot of properties. It's usually 9 units or something like that. Most of them are just only 2-story, no elevator, that type of thing. Whereas usually older. I remember in Canada, we used to see these kind of apartment complexes were quite common before condominiums became common. So you see them here, and then the mansion is just what they call it, is kind of like a condominium complex. And the differences are, like, besides the building structure, but the building material and whatnot is different. And, you know, apatos are usually a bit older, but they tend to be a bit cheaper because they've been around for longer. So just keep that in mind as you're sitting around. If the landlord tells you or the agent tells you we have a mansion or versus a apato, just think of, you know, I'll put some pictures actually on the show notes of this episode so you can kind of see what the differences are. But it kind of confused me at first because I was thinking like a apato apartment, that must be a condo, but no, condos are mansions. So yeah, you can tell your friends. And you know, the cool thing is with the yen, everyone's basically a millionaire here because a million yen is only $10,000. So you can email your friends back home and say, yeah, I'm a millionaire in Japan. I'm living in my mansion. There's another thing called a shared house that you'll see advertised quite a bit, or social housing or things like that. And these are actually really cool if you're here temporarily or you want to live in an environment where you are in contact with a lot of other Japanese at the same time. So what a shared houses are typically, it's where you have your own unit, your own sleeping quarters, but the kitchen and bathroom and everything is shared with everybody else. And what I've seen is many times companies will convert like old apartment complexes to this type of shared environment. And You know, I know what you're probably thinking, like, well, I don't want to live with like 30 other people. It's probably disgusting, but they're not. I mean, some of these places, what's the name of that company called? Social Apartments or Oak House. If you do a search for those two, these places are so nice. The kitchen is like an industrial sized kitchen. It's massive. Many of these have like entertainment rooms, pool table, workout room. I've seen ones that have like a band room, like a soundproof band room. You can jam in there if you want. A fitness studio. One of them is actually connected to a restaurant. And so if you live there, you get a deal in the restaurant. So if you don't need your own actual kitchen, or you don't need that, you can, you know, these are great alternatives to trying to find your own apartment. And if you're new to Japan, they're actually a really great way to meet young Japanese people, because these are obviously popular, a lot of young Japanese people. If you're a student and you're practicing, you're studying Japanese, this is a fantastic way to expand your Japanese ability, because all your neighbors will basically be Japanese. So these kind of shared apartments, I think, are really great. I'm a little old, and so I kind of need my own space. I don't want to share with anybody else. And the rooms are really tiny. They're literally just like for a bed and a small desk. So to me, they feel a little bit kind of like almost like a prison cell. But if you're young and you're just here for temporary and you just want to, you know, someplace to crash, basically, shared apartments are a great alternative as well. If you're on the other end of the spectrum and you've got some cash and maybe you're here on a corporate transfer, there are also serviced apartments. And these are basically condominium units that have hotel-like facilities and amenities to them. So they'll have a concierge, many of them a gym, delivery service, and all this. And you will actually get a fully furnished apartment in a serviced apartment. So I'll post a link to a few of those. The ones that I know of are called Space Design. And if you've got that kind of budget, then there's lots of those available as well. Okay, one last thing I want to talk about terminology is how they describe apartments here. So they obviously in Japan, they use a metric system, which if you're coming from any other part of the world besides America, would be no problem. But if you're in America, you're going to have to convert square feet to square meters. But the other thing that they do is they have this thing called, like, I don't know what they call it, but they describe apartments with these letters that you'll see, such as 1LDK or 2DK or something like that. And what that means is an LDK is the living room, dining room, kitchen. And the number is how many bedrooms it has. So 1LDK is an apartment with one bedroom, a living room, and a dining room, and a kitchen. Now, keep in mind, living room, dining room are probably not what you're thinking if you come from America. If you come from America, because our house is obviously a lot bigger, you're thinking, great, I got a big living room, big dining room, fantastic. No, LDK versus, say, a DK with no living room, just dining room, kitchen, it has more to do with the size of the property than does it really actually have a living room or dining room or not. Because I've seen many of these places and there's no separate room. It's literally one room. And they say, yeah, there's a living room here and then there's a dining room here. But it's not. It's just one big room. So it's just a matter of the size of it. I'll post a video that I did describing this on the show notes of this episode where I actually go to different apartments and you can actually see what a LDK or a 1DK looks like. So it's a little bit confusing at first. Don't get excited that you have like a full-on dining room. Basically, it's just a room and it just means the different size of the place. Another thing that you might hear them advertise sometimes, or they are not advertised, but talk about the size of the housing, size of the apartment is jo. So they sometimes measure these things in the size of the tatami. And if you want to know more about that, because they'll say like this is a 3 jo apartment, and that means like 3 tatami apartment. And that's super confusing because, I mean, who speaks in jo besides people in Japan? But if you want to learn more about that, listen to the very first episode that I did on the season one of Tokyo Podcast, because Adam German does a really great job of describing how to calculate the jo size. And I'll post a link to that on the show notes of this as well. So, because if I do it now, I'll totally mess it up. But keep in mind, apartments in Japan are typically much smaller than what you'll get back home. But at the same time, your rent won't go high. I mean, your rent won't change a lot. And there's a lot of really great ways that you can furnish your place without breaking the bank that kind of makes that small apartment feel a little bit more comfortable. And so the last thing I want to talk about is furnishing your place, because most of these apartments that you'll rent, unless you're renting a service apartment, will be completely empty. No appliances, no nothing. I've even seen some places don't even have light bulbs. And so you're like, here's your key. Thanks for all that money. Here's your totally empty place. So how are you going to go about furnishing your apartment? Well, first thing I suggest you do is look online for what's called sayonara sales. Sayonara in Japanese is obviously goodbye, and it means that these are foreigners that are leaving Japan. Because in Japan, it's difficult and expensive to get rid of your furniture. You probably heard about them, you know, forcing you to sort your garbage and all this kind of stuff. And it's the same thing with your appliances. You can't just, you know, take it to the street side curb and someone will pick it up. So if you want to get rid of your refrigerator or your washing machine, all that, you have to pay to have someone take it away. So to avoid this, a lot of foreigners will just pass their stuff on to whoever's coming into Japan next. And so it's actually a really great way to get stuff for free or at a really heavily discounted price. And so look for these sayonara sales typically near towards the end of the month, because people get more and more desperate because they have a specific date which they have to leave by, and that's when you can usually pick up some really great deals. So look on Craigslist for sayonara sales, or there's a number of Facebook groups that you can join that are all about sayonara sales as well. And when I first moved here, this is exactly what I did. There was a lady that was leaving, and I basically furnished almost my entire apartment with her apartment. She gave me like bookshelf, kitchen table, you know, kitchen utensils, like all kinds of stuff. And it saved me a lot of money from having to go buy all these things individually. So that was really great. So look on there. Now, if you want to buy furniture, there is obviously furniture stores here. They do have an IKEA here. But what I suggest is you go to a place called Nitori. And Nitori is basically like the Japanese version of IKEA. So if you're thinking about buying IKEA furniture, IKEA is here, but they're kind of out in the middle of nowhere. You need a car to get out to them. But Nitori has stores everywhere. And so the concepts are the same. So if you're looking for furniture, I recommend going to Nitori. I'll post a link, like I said. And they do delivery, home delivery as well. The only issue is they usually take a few days to deliver. So I remember when we first moved here, we bought a bed from Nitori and bought a few things, but it took a few days to deliver. So we had to live in our apartment kind of a little bit camping style in the beginning. In the end, it was fine. So check on Nitori. Don't expect a great website, because let's face it, this is Japan. That's the internet. Those two don't mix. So they'll have some generic corporate website. You can't shop online. Even IKEA is so annoying. You can't have delivery here. Every other country IKEA will deliver, but for some reason in Japan they can't do that. But your best bet is just look on the website for the closest Nitori store to you, and then go there physically and take a look around. One last thing about, actually two more things about furnishing your apartment is, if you're kind of tight on budget and you need to buy some appliances, look around your neighborhood or ask some Japanese people where the local recycle store is, because you'll find many recycle shops are selling old appliances, and many of them are usually in good condition, and you can usually find a pretty good deal on these items. So look for recycle shops. And the last thing is, if you want to furnish your apartment as inexpensively as possible, and you're looking for kind of small household items, I recommend you look for the local 100 yen store. One of the companies is called Daiso. You'll see the other signs say, yeah, Hakuen store. And these things are great. Basically, 100 yen is like a dollar. So it's basically like a dollar store. And the cool thing is about in these stores is that, you know, they have all these little knickknacks that just are absolutely perfect for your Japanese apartment, because the apartments are so small. You don't need to buy anything as big, and you got these weirdo spaces everywhere. But then you'll go to the 100 yen store and you'll see this like cabinet or this rack system that just absolutely perfectly fits that space. And so it's actually quite easy to keep your apartment clean and organized, even if it's small. And at these 100 yen stores, you can buy like plates, cups, towels, all sorts of things. So, and I mean, like everything's a dollar, so you can literally furnish your whole apartment for less than like 20 bucks, and you're all set to go. So I will make sure to post links to all of that in the show notes of this episode of the podcast. This is episode number 52 in total. episode number 2 of season 2. But if you go to tokyopodcast.com, you do a search for like how to rent an apartment, both this show and the previous show I did with Adam will come up, and I'll make sure that both shows have all the links that you need so you don't have to kind of search around on the internet. But so those are my thoughts on how to get an apartment in Japan. For me, it was quite challenging because I'd come from Thailand, where in Thailand, I mean, you can get a fully furnished apartment in 10 minutes if you want. You just walk in, you see it, you like it, you got some money, and boom, you're done. Here in Japan, that's not how things work. There's always a lengthy procedure for everything. But the more you can be prepared, the easier it will be for things for you to go along. And one thing to keep in mind, like I see a lot of new foreigners come to Japan. They get all pissed off at all the fees, all the paperwork. Like, this is crap. I'm not going to do this. This is retarded. This is dumb. I mean, you can get all mad and all that stuff, but this is Japan. It's never going to change. Of all the countries in the world that hates change, this is the epitome of it. So don't get stressed out about it. Just try to figure out the easiest way to go around it. The more prepared you are, the easier things will be. If the landlord turns you down because you're a foreigner, don't rage at them. Don't be like, you know, don't be like a social justice warrior. I'm going to picket this. I'm going to change this. Because you're not. Nothing's going to happen. These old geezers are in charge. And they don't want to rent to you, and they're not going to rent to you. So go find someone else that will. If you have any questions about trying to find an apartment in Japan, feel free to email me and I'll do my best to help you along. Otherwise, good luck, and I will talk to you in the next show.